south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
Hey, now, here's something I bet you didn't know. Which country do you think receives the most remittances? You know what remittances are, right? It's about foreigners living and working in a country sending back dough to the folks back home. Now, 99 out of 100 people would say Mexico for sure, because they've got the most non-native-born people living in the States sending money back to Mexico. And if you thought Mexico, you'd be wrong. It's India, by far. The country of India, who've got transplants in every country in the world, sending money back to the folks at home. And yes, on occasion, I run into Indians living in Latin America, too. Though it seems all the Indians I ever run into are Texan geeks. Yeah, for sure, that country's got a lot of brain power. And when they speak Spanish, man, what an accent. Oh, and by the way, talking to one of my engineering buddies, his name is Dan. Actually, it's not Dan. That's the name we gave him because we can't pronounce his Indian name. He told me that every girl in India, every girl, has some gold. Not pure gold coins or bullion. We're talking about gold jewelry. It's always been a tradition there and a quick form of portable wealth. In fact, he told me in India, there's about 20 tons of gold jewelry floating around. And I looked it up. He's right. They've got the most gold in the world in the form of jewelry there. Speaking of gold, and I believe everyone should have some gold, some cash, some crypto, and some land or real estate in the foreign country. That would be the ideal reserve setup for your plan B. Now, it's up to you, the percentage, the breakdown of each one of those items you hold in regards to your total wealth. You just have to look at that stuff as an insurance policy. Oh, and of course, it's good to own silver too, but that stuff's so heavy and hard to cart around. I only suggest you buy some if you're going to stay in one place a long, long time, because it would be murder, or at least a real big hassle, hauling that stuff through borders. It's even quite testy these days bringing gold on planes and through borders, though it used to be easy. I remember one time bringing a little gray box on a plane from Chicago to London, with about 150 gold 1-ounce coins in it and 50 platinum coins. And absolutely no one said a thing. Of course, that was before 9/11. Yep, 9/11, when we stupidly agreed to give away half our freedoms in one fell swoop. But you knew that already, right? Which brings me to this email from James. He says, "Hi, Johnny. Thanks for the fun and educational show. I'm listening to your show for at least a half year now and learning so much, though I have some questions about gold. As for me, I move around between New York City and Guatemala, Antigua, Guatemala, and Lake Atitlan often. I'd like to try to purchase some gold coins in either the U.S. or Guatemala. Can you recommend any stores that sell trustable gold coins in these areas? And what should I buy, U.S. and Canadian coins, or should I buy Guatemalan gold coins? Also, is it cheaper to buy gold coins in Guatemala or Latin America? Or might it be cheaper and safer to buy gold coins in the U.S.? And when I get them, how do I know if they're real or not?" Then he says, "I can't imagine buying gold from a shipping service such as Shipgold because it can disappear so easily. So I prefer buying gold locally, where I'm at anyway. Johnny, what do you think? Do you trust those shipping services? Thanks again. Signed, James." Well, Jimmy, you open the barn door and I'm going to give you an earful on gold right now. Personally, I was always a gold bug, even before I had the dough to buy any amount of gold at all. I was a coin collector. I picked it up from my dad. I had those little blue books, you know, where you stick the pennies, nickels, and dimes in rows according to dates. And back then, you know, when I was a kid, you could actually find silver coins once in a while in your regular pocket change. In fact, I remember you could find dimes, quarters, and halves. That's 1964 and earlier stuff, all the way into the early 1970s, 10 years after they discontinued them. Now, of course, if you know anything about United States silver coins, they're actually 90% silver and around 10% copper to make them more durable. So silver coins I collected for a long, long time. I think I bought my first $5 U.S. gold piece in the late 1970s. And I kept collecting little by little and bought them all at my favorite pawn shop in Chicago. Now, back then, there was really no way to tell if they were counterfeit or not, but pawn shop owner Bill always assured me, even back then, when gold was something like $180 an ounce, the only counterfeits that ever showed up on the radar were copper, gold, or platinum, or palladium, ingots, or bars. Not government coins, because, you see, they weren't produced or stamped out by government, but private refineries, who could theoretically screw around with the metal in the center of those bars. Though even up to the time I left the United States permanently, around 1990, that trusted pawn shop guy, Bill, said that he himself had never seen any counterfeit gold, platinum, or palladium coming through his shop. And, of course, he did have a way to test the stuff. In those days, you did it by figuring out the mass and the volume, using water, a beaker, and a scale to measure the weight and displacement of the gold bar, ingot, or coin. Though nowadays, as you longtime listeners know, it's infinitely easier using an app you put on your smartphone called a ping test, P-I-N-G test. And if you download one of those apps, and they're free, you'll be able to tell with 100% certainty, within about a half a minute, whether your gold or silver coin is real or not. So if you're interested, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com, and I'll send you a link to one or two of those ping test apps. So then how do they work? Well, you balance a gold or silver coin on the tip of your finger or on the eraser of a pencil, then you tap it lightly with a pencil or a pen, and you may or may not hear it ring, but your smartphone app will pick up that frequency. And you see, every real silver and gold coin pings or resonates at a particular frequency or frequencies. There's no way to counterfeit that. That's why, again, my advice is to never buy ingots or bars. Always buy government-issued gold or silver coins. And, of course, there are a select few that I always recommend. That way, if you walk into a coin shop, jewelry store, or pawn shop, they're immediately recognizable and they'll give you a pretty fair price, generally. Now, my number one gold coin pick is the 1 ounce Canadian maple leaf, followed by the 1 ounce U.S. American Eagle. And my number three, the South African Kugrand, which, by the way, unlike the Canadian and American coin, is not 100% gold. Though the 1 ounce Kugrand has an ounce of gold in it, it's alloyed with copper and some other things. So, though it's harder and less likely to scratch up, it's not 99.99% gold like the other two. Though it's easily recognizable around the world and has very high convertibility. So then why is a Kugrand on the list? Why is it even an option? Because practically every adult around the world recognizes the word Kugrand. They were the first ones on the block around a long time before the American and Canadian gold coins, and thus easily convertible. In fact, the 1 ounce gold Kugrand is the most minted coin in history. When all sizes of Kugrand gold coins are added together, there are more Kugrands than any other type of coin ever minted in history. Though, again, they're not as beautiful or lustrous as American Eagles or Canadian Maple Leafs, because they're not 24-karat pure gold. They're 22-karat, about 92% gold and 8% copper. They can even look a little copper-colored and rough and unpolished. But man, in most parts of the world, they're easier to convert into the local funny money than any other gold coin. But because they aren't bright and shiny, sometimes people think they're counterfeit. And you know, since about the year 2000, there have been lots of counterfeits of all kinds of gold coins. Coming out of, guess where? China. But then again, you can easily sort them out with a ping test, which does not work at all when you're buying gold bars or ingots. So again, stay completely away from gold bars and ingots, just for that reason. And you know, since the world's on a funny money printing binge, gold and silver just have to go up. And the more they go up, the more counterfeits you'll find out there. All right, now for today's fun fact. Did you know that in the 1780s, when the U.S. first adopted the dollar, you know, that's when the first Congress under George Washington and his Secretary of Treasury, Hamilton, created the first U.S. bank and started coining money. Did you know that from about 1790 to 1912, there was no U.S. dollar inflation because it was 100% backed by gold? So from 1790 to the beginning of the First World War, gold remained in a very tight range of around 20 bucks an ounce. And then, surprise, surprise, in 1913, when the Fed was created and the First World War came around, well, gold at 20 bucks an ounce was never to be seen again. By the way, speaking of big gold bars you imagine are sitting in Fort Knox, you probably saw last week, or maybe you didn't, that 83 tons of fake gold bars were found in China in a massive counterfeiting scandal that had those 83 tons of gold bars used as collateral for banks and insurance companies. Turns out they were just gold-covered copper bars, and that's not an isolated case. Turns out in 2016, Again, in China, regulators found adulterated gold bars used as collateral for more than a dozen banks. They were supposed to be backing around $19 billion worth of Chinese loans. However, they found they were nothing but black tungsten plates covered with gold. Not only that, the Chinese company King Gold, who made the recent run of fake bars, had pledged thousands of kilograms of the stuff to their own creditors. About 200 billion yuan's worth. So then how big and bad a problem is this? Well, in the most recent scandal with 83 tons of fake gold, turns out that's around 5% of the entire gold reserves of China's state bank. And nobody knows, nor do they really want to know, how much of the rest of that gold is fake. And how about all the gold reserves stashed away in U.S., London, and German and Singapore banks? Seems nobody really wants to find out. Just too, well, scary. In short, analysts are saying way more than 5% of China's official gold reserve may be fake. So then what about other sovereign countries' gold reserves? Like I said, nobody really wants to know. Worse yet, it's pretty well assumed that many gold refining companies are engaging in blatant fraud. And once worldwide creditors and insurance companies start testing the collateral and discover, to their amazement, their collateral, instead of gold, is nothing but tungsten or copper, they have two choices: reveal the fraud and watch their company's stock go to zero, or shut up and quietly try to buy up all the gold needed to literally fill the void. However, most won't have the money. So what happens next? Well, a sort of a panic scramble to buy physical gold clandestinely as to not upset the markets, but it will, because we're talking about huge amounts here. So really, it's only a matter of time before the price of gold shoots to the moon. Some people are saying $5,000, even $10,000 an ounce. We shall see. Oh, and by the way, I put together a little 5-page report that I give to everyone who comes down to my seminar. It's all the dope on counterfeit silver, gold, platinum, and palladium, including secret inside photos of machines at these factories that actually stamp out the fake stuff. If you want that free report and it could save you a lot of grief, send me an email, theexpatfinals@gmail.com. All right, so back to some of James's questions about gold. He says, can you recommend any stores that sell trustable gold coins in the areas, the U.S. or Guatemala? Well, let me tell you, when it comes to Guatemala and practically every Latin American country, there are plenty of gringo and expat fake book groups where people are buying and selling things all the time. And I see gold up there quite a bit, too. I don't necessarily see it in large quantities, you know, just a couple of 1-ounce coins here and there. But hey, even in my own expat network, mostly in Guatemala, oftentimes, and I've seen this happen just recently, someone in the group or someone who came down to my expat insider seminar will put out the word that they want to buy or sell some gold. Then we'll all get wind of it, and sooner or later, buyers and sellers will hook up. Though as far as buying larger quantities, let's say 10 ounces or more, well, for that, you'll have to go to one of the numismatic stores. You know, every Latin American country, including Guatemala, have coin coleccionistas, coin collectors, and stamp collectors. And there are coin and stamp collecting stores and organizations that have periodic stamp and coin shows. And there's the fact that in every big city, including Guatemala City, there's an area of the downtown where they have block after block of jewelry stores and custom jewelry makers. And many of them have signs right in the window that say, we buy and sell gold. In Spanish, naturally. Now, of course, the best way to buy a large quantity of gold is to go with one of the big online bullion dealers like JM Bullion or even Schiff. And they will ship it to you, insured, in America, and it will get there. In fact, I know many people who have used their services and no one's ever had a problem. And believe it or not, when you're in the States anyway, the best and safest way to ship gold and silver is using U.S. Postal Service registered mail. Because you see, with registered mail, you can insure your gold or silver, whatever, for up to $25,000. And when you order from one of those big companies like JM Bullion, they ship it insured like that. So then why not FedEx or UPS? It's because they don't offer insurance for precious metals unless you are a precious metal dealer with their own third-party insurance policy. So you as an individual, if you're shipping gold or silver, want to use registered mail, U.S. Postal Service. Now, if you think it's not safe because the U.S. Postal Service is an agency of the government, and well, you know how the government is. Just remember, U.S. registered mail is used by the diamond industry for all their raw diamond shipments and by the U.S. government alphabet agencies to send classified top secret information up to the second highest top secret category. Of course, we're talking about shipping within the states. Oh, and by the way, don't let post office employees try to save you some money by suggesting you use insured mail, which is cheaper. Don't let them talk you out of using registered mail. Because, you see, the U.S. Postal Service has a clause in their insurance policy saying specifically they won't pay for lost precious metals unless they're shipped by registered mail. By the way, most of the bullion companies will ship outside of the U.S. or Canada. Not to all countries. You have to check their list. But the problem is there. Your package will end up in the local country aduana, the customs office. Then you'll have to pay duty on the insured value, which could be anywhere from 10, 20, or even 30% of the value, which is another reason you don't want to ship it down if you don't absolutely have to. Now, as far as having just a couple of 1 ounce gold coins, let's say, well, probably about a half a year ago or so, I spoke quite a bit on how to clandestinely get them through customs and borders and airports, so you'll have to go back in the files and check it out. As you know, there are some time-tested techniques that allow you to get a couple of gold coins anyway through airports and borders with ease. All right, so I answered that question about which ones to buy. That would be Canadian Maple Leafs, U.S. Eagles, and Cougarants. Though I completely stay away from Latin American gold coins. They made a lot of them, and they're pretty, but they are not easily convertible, acceptable, or recognized. So unless you're a coin collector and keeping them for a hobby, don't buy them. First of all, you won't find a ping test for them because they're not highly circulated. And secondly, if you take them out of the country, let's say it's Guatemala, most people, because they've never seen one before, will think they're fake. And as for that question, is it cheaper to buy gold coins in the U.S., Canada, or down in Latin America like Guatemala? Well, it could go either way, depending on the spot price and what the seller thinks they're worth and what you're willing to pay and whether there's some bargaining room. The point is, you never really want to buy gold coins that have more worth because of their age or rareness. So, for example, if someone says, I've got a $20 U.S. gold piece, well, it's not the same as a 1 ounce U.S. eagle. Although they look the same, he's going to say his has numismatic value and it's worth more than an ounce of gold. That kind of stuff's for collectors only. What we're interested in is modern 1 ounce bullion coins. So, you want to buy coins, for example, in the case of 1 ounce gold coins, that are very near their spot price. For example, if the spot gold price is $1,500 and you have a U.S. 1 ounce gold eagle, you should be able to get around $1,500 for it practically anywhere. At pawn shops, jewelry stores, and online Craigslist sites like OLX.com here in Latin America. Now let's say you had a 1917 U.S. $20 gold piece. You know, $20 gold pieces, though they look like bullion coins, they're slightly less than an ounce. They're 0.96 of an ounce. Now, because it's a collector's item, it's always going to be worth more than spot price. The thing is, the only way you're going to get the true numismatic value out of that coin, you know, due to its age, rarity, and condition, etc., is to find a coin dealer or a coin show or some collector online. In other words, it's going to be complicated for you to get more than the gold value out of it. So my advice, unless you're a collector, don't even bother with those kinds of coins. Go for the modern Canadian Maple Leafs, the U.S. Eagles, and Cougarants, because you'll always be able to get near the spot price for them when you sell. Oh, and bottom line, I do trust some of those online coin dealers like JM Bullion. The prices are right, they'll ship right to your door in the U.S. and Canada, and in a lot of other countries too. However, I don't recommend you have them shipped to a foreign country because they'll get stuck in the aduana and you'll end up paying a hell of a duty. Now, as for the question, which makes everyone nervous, will the TSA confiscate your gold if you go through borders or fly on a plane? Well, you can get away with a couple of gold coins, but like I said, go back into the archives and listen to the show where I went through the whole deal on that. You'll be surprised. All right, enough said about that. Meanwhile, back in Latin America, this is a show about Latin America, you know. Many times I've said, everywhere you go, in every public park and garden, you'll see statues of conquistadores, genocidal dictators, and many, many, many of Christopher Columbus. He's the number one guy in bronze down here. That's right, Columbus, otherwise known as Cristobal Colón. And the Colón spelled exactly like colon, not cologne as in perfume. Which begs the question, what were Colin Powell's parents thinking? A name like that'll make you or break you. I bet as a kid he got his ass whooped raw. Anyway, as of this date, today's show, Latinos have not taken to the streets with spray cans, machetes, and sledgehammers defacing and toppling statues. So far, there's been none of that. But when you think about it, they certainly have a case, don't they? Now, the talk on the street about Columbus, the conquistadores, the way they invaded and pillaged and raped, etc., has always been sort of politely glossed over. And, you know, just like up in the States, the history books don't exactly tell the truth. Again, that he and his buddies raped and plundered, came for the gold, massacred entire tribes of people, imprisoned, killed, tortured, and made slaves out of all the locals who didn't play ball. Not to mention they killed all the holy men who were worshipping corn and snakes and the sun. Now, the thing is, even smart, well-tuned-in Latinos are wondering what the hell's going on up in the States with people defacing and toppling all those monuments and statues. Yep, they certainly think the United States has gone nuts. Though, when you think about it, if taken to the logical or illogical extreme, that would mean practically every monument and statue here in Latin America should be torn down, too. Even all the thousands of religious statues, popes, cardinals, and bishops. After all, they tagged along with the conquistadores, forcing all the natives to become Catholics under penalty of death. Then again, that's what my parents did to me. As for my completely politically incorrect view on this, I think all statues and monuments should be left alone. Because, you know, no matter what went down in the past, even when you're thinking about slavery, which was not in any way unique to the U.S., think of this. Brazil received 15 times as many slaves as the U.S., but no one's pulling any statues down there. Oh, and by the way, even today, slavery's being practiced in Africa and the Middle East. Look it up. So all in all, Brazil imported something like 5.1 million enslaved Africans. And it took till May 13th, 1888, 25 years after Lincoln's Emancipation Proclamation up in the States, for Brazil to abolish slavery. Did you get that? 25 years later. So where's the outrage? And get this, Cuba imported 778,000 slaves, more than twice as many than the whole USA combined. And it took them till 1880, 17 years after Lincoln's Emancipation Proclamation in 1863. Now, the truth is, and you can look this up, out of the 10.7 million Africans who were directly shipped as slaves to the New World, 388,000 ended up in North America. That's only 3.6% of all the slaves that came over. Now, the funny thing is that this conversation has come up a number of times here in Latin America at various parties with educated Latinos and so-called educated gringos, too. And you know what? When I mention those numbers, no one believes it. And some of them give me the kind of look that says, you shouldn't be making light of such a touchy and serious subject, when really it's just another example of confirmation bias. It's that people don't want to accept things that go against their long-held beliefs. The truth is, and there's that word again, truth. People don't want the truth if it differs from their concept of reality. Meanwhile, with something like 96% of all slaves going to Central and South America, and the Caribbean islands, of course, no one's toppling any statues. They're not even talking about it, except for the occasional indigenous person who really has a hard-on for Columbus. Hey, can you blame them? Oh, and by the way, over the years I've made it a point to talk to my own workers, cleaning ladies, maintenance guys, painters, contractors, pretty much all of them indigenous with lots of Mayan blood. And I ask them right out how they feel about Columbus and the conquistadores and all that. And you know what? One of my favorite maintenance guys, Chepe, who's only got about a sixth grade education, he said, "Don Johnny, if it wasn't for Columbus, Colón, all the conquistadors and the raping, pillaging, and the diseases they brought along with them," he said, "if it all hadn't worked out exactly the way it did, I never would have met my wife, had my five kids, I probably never would have been born, because my own parents probably never would have met each other." He said, "if everything hadn't worked out exactly the way it did, with all the good, the bad, and the despicable, I wouldn't be standing here right now talking to you. I probably wouldn't have been born, and probably not you either." And you know, I had to pause a while. I thought, wow, my man Chepe is extremely overqualified for that maintenance job. He's a real deep thinker. And then I eventually said, "Chepe, if you could go back in time and change all that, you probably wouldn't do it then, right?" He said, "No, I wouldn't change a thing." And then I brought up the Hitler baby thought experiment. Remember that one? You know, if you could go back in time and kill Hitler when he was a baby, then World War II and the Holocaust and all that would never have happened. Well, you know what? It's just like Chepe said. If everything that happened in the past did not go down as it did, you and I probably would never have been born. In fact, I know I wouldn't have, because my dad met my mom when he was a soldier on leave at one of those GI dances. So, no Hitler, no World War II, no GI dance. So, although it sounds so very logical and humane to think if we would have killed some of these genocidal douchebags before they came of age to do any damage. Good idea if you had a time machine, right? The problem is no one seems to think about the secondary effects. Because for every little thing you change in the past, it's a case of the butterfly effect. You've heard of that, right? You know, if a butterfly flaps its wings on the other side of the earth, eventually it has an effect on everything that happens. Or think of it this way. If, for example, at any time in your past life, you took a right turn instead of a left, that would have put you on a completely different path in your life. You know, that's all part of the multiple universe theory, too. But I digress, as usual. Anyway, defacing and knocking down statues and monuments. Well, the fact is, once again, if things hadn't played out exactly as they did, down to the nanosecond, chances are you would not have been born. Because your parents or grandparents or great-grandparents would never have met. Same with the slave thing, as bad as it was. Without it having gone down exactly the way it did, the protesters, looters, and rioters you see on the street right now would most likely never have been born. Nor you or I, for that matter. Oh, and another thing, there's a point of contention here. If you remove all the reminders of the past that you don't like, the next generation that comes along will have forgotten the past completely. Yeah, it's a brain teaser, all right, huh? So, what do you think? Would you go back in time and take that chance yourself? You know, kill off baby Hitler? Or maybe kill off baby Columbus and let someone else discover America? Like maybe the French or British or the Russians. Again with the Russians. Meanwhile, the Spanish people are pissed. Last Thursday, the Spanish Royal Academy of History issued a statement deploring the attacks on statues being torn down, honoring people like Columbus, the author of Don Quixote, Cervantes, and other conquistadores. By the way, Don Quixote, written in 1600, is considered the very first modern novel. Anyway, the Spaniards are saying, ship the statues back. We'll gladly take them off your hands. Because they condemn the attacks against Spanish figures, arguing that they're not just against the memory of famous people, but also against the history of Spain due to the world's lack of knowledge. In other words, since dummies in America can't view them in a historical context, don't destroy them. Send them back. We'll take them. Meanwhile, hundreds of statues featuring Spanish icons have been toppled, vandalized, and officially or non-officially removed during recent continued violent protests in North America. South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.